tests every week, and I used to get really scared. But this seems like a much nicer way for children to learn.
It's user-friendly.
Yeah, it is.
Even though, as we said, Fröhlich has an umlaut, which really is quite... where's the umlaut in the whole scenario? It's quite challenging. Zach, did you have a look at the website as well?
I did, yes.
So, thoughts from the American perspective? Because, as you said, sometimes it gets a bit challenging. In fact, you take the British line of writing words and things.
Sometimes. Mm. With colour, at least. But... Yeah, the website looks good. Are you looking to just have this for parents to use in the home, or do you want to get this into the public school system as well?
Well, actually, it's meant for both. Mm-hmm. What happened was I produced a workbook for the children that I teach that have some spelling difficulties and learning difficulties, and children that have a diagnosis of, say, dyslexia or dyspraxia. Have an individual educational plan, and on one of their targets in literacy is to learn, say, the first 100 high-frequency words over, say, 6 months. And so I produced it originally for my pupils, and it worked so well that we started to sort of roll it out through the sort of year three pupils. And so it's something that can be used in schools. But also, I know that if parents work with their children at home, the children learn faster and quicker. So it's aimed at both. And I put the website up to accompany the workbooks so that parents had a reference point for the different tips and tricks. But then I realized that parents weren't always in the know of the different learning difficulties that pupils can have and how they benefit from things like color coding and... NLP, visualization, all of that sort of thing. And so it sort of grew from there, really. So it's actually aimed at both markets. But I'm really keen to get parents and grandparents involved at home.
NLP, of course, is neuro-linguistic programming, which has gone through a variety of little three-letter acronym, which I know, Nicola, you love the three-letter acronyms. It's like ostrich, outrageous suggestions taken readily in courageous hands. Marvellous.
It actually works really, really well. I mean, they use NLP in business and, you know, in different sorts of therapies and things like that. But for spelling, it works brilliantly because the kids sort of visualise the word and they sort of close their eyes and they imagine what the word looks like and the different vowels and the different letters, and they give them colours, and it helps them see the word, as it were, because often children with difficulties have very good, you know, visual skills, and rather than sort of just rote learning, you know, as one of your ladies was saying about learning a spelling test at school, which is really difficult and sort of quite boring, this sort of encompasses different kinesthetic angles of learning, really.
Clearly, in higher education, as we move through the system, we have DART-registered pupils and students who kind of will go through that process. Is this something which can also work with the more mature student, the students who might not necessarily have been diagnosed as dyslexic, and it's something that kind of manifests itself as they're going through the educational system?
Well, it's funny you should say that, but it's not unusual for teenagers and young adults to have got through secondary school and obviously with some very good grades to get into uni. Some people get straight A's and B's and you know, they think everything's fine, and they get to uni and they discover that actually they're finding the learning in the first year very, very, very tricky. And sometimes these are very, very exceptionally bright and able pupils who learn well in a small environment, and when they get to uni, they find the method of being in lectures, the auditory sort of nature, if you like, of being in a lecture room quite challenging. So, in fact, if they can remember their skills from school in terms of organizing things, color coding things, putting things into categories, and overlearning, then they will find that helps them, you know, a lot more, really.
Jackie, any thoughts from yourself on this?
I think it's
project?
A great idea. Anything which encourages reading and encourages those skills. I know when we get new students, some of them can really find it daunting if they're faced with huge reading lists. And if there are ways which in which we can encourage them and help them, then that's fantastic. I mean, I've had a look at the website and I think it's great. I mean, my daughter's 15 and I wish I would have known about something like this when she was younger. It would have been fantastic.
Should have come on the show earlier.
Well, I mean, it's also, I mean, I did, you know, as a mum, I'm a mum of two dyslexic children. You know, I actually quit my job to retrain as a dyslexic teacher. And going through all that training, discovered that I was dyslexic. I couldn't believe it. I got through my schooling as well and found times very, very, very challenging. And then it all made a lot of sense, you know, because you're in a much more nurturing, smaller environment where there's lots of pictures and you can associate things and learn and learn and overlearn, and you've got templates and all of that. And then suddenly you get to uni and you don't have as much as that, and it's more independent learning. But I do believe there's more help in uni now. Is that not the case?
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, here at the University of Lincoln, we've got really positive structures in place for helping our students. And every module tutor encourages the students, and if they are having problems, then we know how to deal with them ourselves or where to pass them on to. So, you know, the really good structures here.
Yeah, things have changed a lot, haven't they?
Yes, sort of five or ten
years. I still recall a time where, I won't mention any names, but speaking to somebody actually who was then connected with the Inner London Education Authority. Now, there's a blast from the past, didn't you?
Definitely.
And they were saying, dyslexia, it's just a middle-class line for saying their kids are lazy. We've moved on a bit from that, quite rightly so.
Absolutely. We really, really have moved on, and there's just so much more in place to help them. You know, and one of the things I would highly recommend is at the point of applying through the UCAS system is, you know, a lot of people don't realise there's a lot of facilities, good facilities, on the UCAS website where they can take things like the Stanford test, which is free, or Centigrade Online, which I think costs about £15 or something. And that really helps a student understand where their strengths and weaknesses lie. And they may not have realised that whilst they were at school. And it also helps to identify different sort of learning styles as well. So maybe they're thinking of applying for a particular course, but in point of fact, if they do these different tests online, they might actually find that they're better off, they have better people skills than they thought that they had, rather than analytical skills. And I think it helps guide them as well to applying for the right course.
Nicola, thoughts from yourself? As a graduate, and let's be honest, we celebrate the fact that you graduated with an upper class honours degree in the Media, Culture and Communications programme.
I was just wondering, like, what would be, like, telltale signs of someone who would be dyslexic? Like, just out of general interest, like, would you be able to...
When you're a young adult, a teenager?
Yeah.
Well, if you've managed to get through school and you've got some great A-levels, then you've probably got a very high IQ, and you can probably, you know, read very well. But quite often organisational skills haven't always manifested themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think also dissecting for information, which often doesn't have pictures. If you're analysing a theory book, very often there aren't pictures involved. And I think that throws pupils, or students rather, and I think primarily it's about the volume of information. And if you're not able to remember facts, so if you learn and learn and learn for an exam, and you still can't remember it, that is often another telltale sign that, because often people with dyslexia and other specific learning difficulties have short-term memory issues that maybe haven't manifested themselves because they've done a lot of overlearning of the same information over and over and over again, and they've managed to eventually memorize it. And at uni you don't have that opportunity to, you get a lecture, you go away and you learn some information, but you don't always have a chance to revisit that lecture and that information in a sort of a kinesthetic way. So I think it's about not being able to organise information and feeling overwhelmed by volumes of information. That's another telltale sign.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Joy, any thoughts from yourself?
Well, I've been finding this particularly interesting. I've got a 15-year-old son, and he is dyslexic. I do think it's interesting what you're saying about visuals, because it's something we've always recognised in Kieran, that he has got a fantastic visual gift. You know, he can see things, and he'll spot tiny details in things, and we'll be quite amazed. But you know, I just think it's so interesting to think of these different learning things, because I do think it's one thing I picked up from your website was that children often can, you know, when they're writing creatively, they often feel sort of put off doing that because they feel the spelling's putting them off. They're scared.
Yeah.
They're scared to write. And I always think that's been a problem with Kieran. He's scared sometimes to write what he wants to write because the spelling is the stumbling block there.
It's so unfortunate.
Yeah.
It really, really is unfortunate. And what we try and do is we try and encourage children to write. Forget about the spelling. What we want is their wonderful creative ideas, because their ideas are quite something. And then when it comes to the spelling, rather than pick them up on every single spelling, misspelling rather, we pick them up on the high-frequency words, and they're the words that they are needing to spell every single day. And so if children can learn to spell those, then the ones that they are unable to spell are going to be fewer and far between.
Mm.
And that's what we, as specialist teachers, do. We actually focus on... Obviously, we teach spelling rules, and we do synthetic phonics and encoding skills and all of that, because it is important.
Mm.
But we really focus on high and medium frequency words so that they are comfortable with spelling the basics.
Yeah.
And then the words that they don't know, we get them to look them up. I mean, I suggest to a lot of my pupils to buy Franklin spell checkers or Oxford spell checkers that are really cheap,
mm-hmm.
and they can put those words in spelt anyway, you know, in a bizarre sort of spelling, and these thesauruses and spelling checkers are so intelligent, they pick up the phonetic spelling and they give them the correct alternative.
That's brilliant, isn't
and,
it? Yeah.
And so that is what we aim for. We aim for good spelling for high-frequency words, and then using, spell checkers, portable spell checkers where they can. Because if you use the spell checker on a software program, often it doesn't bring up the word that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But, you know, these handheld jobs are fantastic, really good.
What can we say? Clearly, Caroline, as we sort of progress through the whole thing, we've got to create the next generation of Scrabble players and Countdown contestants.
Absolutely.
As well. So that's very,
absolutely,
very crucial. Caroline, it's been fantastic just touching base with you. So a reminder, the web address is www.icanspell.co.uk. That's icanspell.co.uk. I know we're going to talk about embedding some audio on your web in the very near future, and I think Natalie will be on the case to hopefully sort those things through, so we'll talk about that in various other ways. Have you had a reasonably interesting first stage or first debut performance here on Siren 107.3 FM today?
I love your show. I've been listening to it for a whole hour. It's great.
Well,
really great. I think every uni should have one.
Well, we like to feel that we're a gift from the university to the community, and from the community to the university. That's the important thing.
Fantastic.
That's a strapline of that. So I take it then, Carolina, you'll be joining us again in the not too distant future.
Absolutely,
Carolina.
All the very best to all of you. Bye.
Speak soon.
Bye.
Bye.